Good afternoon, fellow Patriots. This is Matt Shea, and welcome to Patriot Radio, broadcasting live from the capital of free Washington, Spokane Valley, brought to you once again by the committee to elect Matt Shea Republican and the legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, bringing you the story behind the story and the news behind the news. And once again, this is the hard year for us. We got to do the work to implement freedom because our hope is not in man, but in Jesus Christ. And we can't end in prayer. We must also move to action. And as Exodus 15:3 says, the Lord is a warrior. The Lord is his name. Are we warriors? Now, I had a friend of mine yesterday really show me a great passage in Scripture from Zephaniah. And he was talking about how encouraging this Scripture is for several reasons. The first, and what I really, you know, what I really appreciate is that God was willing to lay down his life through his son, Jesus Christ. Literally, Jesus Christ laying down his life for us on this earth, loving us yet while we're still sinners. But this captures not just, this passage, it's Zephaniah 3:17, captures not just the love part, captures the other part that I want to highlight today for you. So Zephaniah 3:17, and this is great. The Lord your God is in your midst, a victorious warrior. A victorious warrior. He will exult over you with joy. He will be quiet in his love. He will rejoice over you with shouts of joy. He's rooting for us, and he's a victorious warrior. We don't ever have to walk alone again. We need to walk in victory. We need to walk knowing that he is next to us. Many of you are familiar with Psalm 91. Many people call it the soldier's psalm. And my unit actually over in Iraq, we talked about this psalm. We actually prayed it together before we went into battle. I personally read it every day. But the Lord is a warrior, a victorious warrior, always needs to be coupled with the fact that he will be quiet in his love for us, that love is always still there, and that's one of the reasons he is a victorious warrior. Anyway, that passage to me really exemplified everything we should be doing and walking in the truth and spirit and knowing that the Lord is right next to us, walking every day. It doesn't matter the odds from a perspective of the world. It doesn't matter that the situation seems hopeless from a perspective of the world. The Lord's a victorious warrior. He's walking right next to us, walking with us through all the trials and tribulations with his love right there as well. And if that doesn't encourage and comfort you today, I don't know what will. But for us in particularly the political arena, those of you that are listening that are pastors, we experience the battle almost every day. And if you get a chance, read that tonight for yourselves and ask if you really believe that. Because if we believe what we believe is really real, God will change. Not may. He will change the world through each one of us. In fact, that's what Jesus Christ wants to do. He wants to change the world through each one of us. I don't exactly understand it. I don't know if my mind can fathom that or get around that idea, but that's what his word says, and his word is true, and his word is good. And thought I would share that with y'all today, because I have the feeling that the battles are going to intensify here in the next few months, and we need first to be engaging in the warfare of the spiritual realm. And that brings me now to your daily intelligence briefing on the international front. As I've been mentioning, the Polish people joining the United States and the Polish leadership as well in the fight against radical Islam and a few other things that are happening too, you got to see in the speech that Trump gave over there. It really was a turning point, and I think there are alliances forming that we don't know. Obviously, he's probably not making things like that public. But the fact of the matter, there are people in Europe that understand what time it is, and they're drawing back to their Christian roots. They're drawing back toward the Lord. And it's happening in Poland. It's happening in Hungary. It's happening in parts of northern Italy. And, you know, these are the same areas, interestingly enough, where during the Siege of Vienna in 1683, the peoples joined together at that time, too. And I think that when we look at this situation in Europe, we can actually pray that they would draw closer to the Lord and they would be allies with us. But we can't neglect our own backyard. We need to be praying, obviously, not just for revival here in America, but that we, that the Lord would be using us and working through us to bring about the conditions for revival as well. Moving on next to the Middle East, it looks like things are kind of calming down there. Ceasefire in Syria, brokered by Trump and Putin. But also, it looks like the Iranian issue is calmed down as well. They had fired ballistic missiles into eastern Syria near where U.S. troops were and also allied troops. But really, I think the bigger story is this report of the Kurdish vote for independence in northern Iraq on the 25th of July. And we need to really keep our eyes on that because that really could be a sea change. If you have an independent country part of it, then you could see a move for the part of Syria that's Kurdish to break away, the part of Turkey that's Kurdish to break away, and actually the part of Iran that is Kurdish to break away. And again, that's the area of the world that was the Medes of the Medes and Persians. So very, very interesting developments over there. And of course, Israel right now is eerily silent. The whole area there seems to be eerily silent. And it just seems like something, we're kind of on the cusp of something. So please, again, pray for the peace in Jerusalem. All right. Also, on the international front, the bloodiest Ramadan, Islamic Holy Month, in history. Over 1,600 people killed. Unbelievable. And I think it's, again, something that we can't look at in a vacuum here in the United States. It's happening everywhere, but here, it has happened here. We need to be cognizant of that fact as well. Also on the international front, the massive buildup in Korea is now a drawdown. The three aircraft carrier groups that were off the coast of North Korea are no longer there. I think there's one maybe close. But looks like there is a de-escalation there for right now. But these missile tests continue. Another two-stage ballistic missile. Continued threats to hit Alaska, Hawaii, maybe even the west coast of the United States. And obviously, there are people in the Department of Defense taking those threats very seriously. So just because there's a little bit of a de-escalation right now, I don't think means that by any stretch that we're out of the woods. Also on the international front, Venezuelan civil unrest. And finally, a mainstream media outlet really reporting on this about the rationing of toothpaste. I mean, this, you know, it's not just toothpaste, folks. I mean, we've been talking about this show for months. It's food, these horrific stories of cannibalism coming out of the prisons where individuals are selected to be eaten. All of these just, I mean, unfathomable things for us. But again, the cautionary tale of this is what happens when socialism collapses. This is what happens when you run out of money to print more money, which is what an oil-rich nation in Venezuela people thought would never happen. And I'm trying to get a hold of some recent immigrants from, they're really more appropriately refugees from Venezuela, to get some firsthand accounts of what is going on there on the ground. We've talked about the unrest that's occurring and the fact that they're on the cusp of a civil war. Really, there already is a civil war in that country going on. And I want to get some firsthand experiences from Christians that have fled. So I hope to have folks on the show here maybe in about 3 weeks that we can bring on to give a firsthand account of what's there and why it's a cautionary tale for us in America. Again, something we cannot just readily dismiss because people said it would never happen, and yet it has. On the national front, again, the S&P downgrade of Illinois to near junk. Are they going to officially make Illinois junk? Waiting on that. Puerto Rico in bankruptcy. Oregon, California, in very serious financial trouble, as we all know, and it's not reported. And you can go on to certain websites. There's one great website called Mercatus Center, and you can go on and see the maps of the long-range pension spending. You can see solvency of states as far as long-term debt, all debt combined. And what's great is Eastern Washington, Eastern Oregon, Idaho, Montana, Wyoming, the Dakotas, all are very solvent. We live in the best place in the country. And another reason, I think, for the 51st state, because if you go to the west side, same fiscal long-run solvency is not there. Also on the national front, the U.S. military is going to debut an Iron Man suit in 2018. That news last week. And you got to, if you get a chance, just take a few minutes, click on it online, and just take a look at the picture. It's wild. It actually looks a little bit like RoboCop. If any of you are familiar with that movie, I'm probably dating myself by saying that, but an Iron Man suit actually being deployed for the U.S. military next year. And are we going to catch up? I was talking to a group of youth last night at a local church and was mentioning the fact that, you know, I want to see them really be used by the Lord in whatever the Lord wants to do with them. And so that I'm sitting in front of a television set, and then I realized, well, maybe there's not going to be a TV then. Maybe it'll be a hologram. And then I sat in my rocking chair, and they all kind of looked at me funny. I said, well, if those things still exist, maybe this will be a hover chair. I mean, that's how fast things are moving with this, and I think we need to look ahead and think ahead. What are the implications, not just for freedom and liberty, but what are the implications for Christianity? How can we use those, some of those technologies, to spread the gospel of Jesus Christ and make disciples? Also on the national front, more doubts on global warming. I want to go through three. Now, this has been like the last 2 weeks, article after article after article has been coming out, really putting the final nails in the coffin of this scientifically. It's just been absolutely incredible trying to keep up with it. But the first is Michael Mann was in court. Now, he's the guy that invented the hockey stick graph. Michael Mann was humiliated in court because he was not giving up his source data. And some are arguing he might be in contempt of court, but that really solidified in many people's minds that, you know, most normal scientists want their things to be replicated. Why aren't you showing it? Then you had a study that came out. Now, somebody tried to call me on this the other day, and I was like, well, these are peer-reviewed studies. So there was a study that came out by Ned Nikolov and Carl Zeller that says and postulates that the idea that greenhouse gas actually contributes to warming is completely off base, that the sun and other processes are actually the primary driver of any warming on the earth and any of the cyclical changes on the earth. And most people have understood that. Now, that paper is being debated back and forth, but once again, it's another paper calling into question the current paradigm. Also, a study came out in 2015, and it was brought back up recently. This study showed that glaciers are advancing in Washington state. So this is from 2015, but again, glaciers on Mount Baker, Washington began to advance. So throwing these things into question that when, you know, a Delaware-sized piece of anything breaks off, which was in the news the other day, does that really indicate warming, or is that just a natural process? And if anybody has ever done the experiment with a glass of ice and water, when you take the ice cube out of it, does it change a lot? When you put it back in, does it change a lot? If you look at the science behind some of this, think about it in simple terms, and think about it also from the idea that some of these things are done based on an agenda for money. And, you know, I'm not trying to be cynical or anything. It's just the fact of the matter of seeing it in the political realm of what has been happening. The last study, very interesting, this is a peer-reviewed study that came out, showed that the temperature adjustments, okay, so these are temperature adjustments by human beings accounted for nearly all of the warming recorded in climate data. That is a peer-reviewed study. And for those of you that understand the difference, peer-reviewed means peers have already taken a look at it and subjected it to testing. And if that holds up to further scrutiny, that obviously could be a knockout punch to the alarmism agenda. All right, moving on to the regional front, down to Nevada. Today, jury selection finished up, as I understand it, in the second part of the Bundy Ranch trial down there. And a lot of folks very alarmed at how things were conducted down there. Now, this is very interesting. This is one of the quotes that's coming from Readout News. Judge Navarro agreed with a certain motion, okay, but she also ruled in favor of the prosecution on every single pretrial motion. So for those of you watching and following that, and I'll just tell you as an attorney that it's rare that you win every single motion, very rare. So that the fact that that's happening casts kind of a cloud over the proceedings down there right now, and we're going to continue to follow that. And continue to follow the investigation of FBI agents and the one indictment that's already been handed down in regards to obstruction of justice for one of the FBI agents that allegedly shot twice at Lavoie Finicum approaching the roadblock and then tried to cover up the fact that he shot twice. Lastly, on the regional front, we look like we might be going back early next week to vote on a Hearst fix. For all of you that have been following that, that's the moratorium on any new well drilling in eastern Washington, predominantly in Spokane County right now. And I say that to simplify it, because really the Hearst decision didn't say there was a moratorium, but that's been the reaction at the county level because of the presumption that there is an impact if you drill a well on water, even though under the current law before that case, that presumption was it was a de minimis impact of 5,000 gallons a day or less for each well that was drilled for residential purposes. So looks like there might be a chance at an agreement to solve the Hearst decision, one of the greatest property rights issues of our time. And I will keep you updated on what happens there. Keep up to date on Facebook and Patriot Radio Facebook page and my own personal Facebook page as well, and follow those. Lastly, on the local front, two primaries coming up. Mayor Rod Higgins facing two challengers, Pam Haley facing four. And I'm just going to say this just in being objective. When you come out to Spokane Valley, the roads are in pretty good condition. When you look at the projects that are being done without raising taxes, it's been phenomenal. Pines Road being started, now Barker Road also being started, and the expansion of the industrial park to bring more businesses in. So you have to ask your question why people are running against them. And some of those people have been linked to Indivisible and have been linked to the progressive movement. And in fact, one Facebook page actually said that there is a slate of unofficial slate of progressive candidates running against the current city council in Spokane Valley. Folks, I don't want to see Spokane Valley turn into the city of Spokane. I'm just going to be straight honest with you. I don't want that to happen, and I hope you don't either. And that is the briefing. Remember, the antidote to dependency and socialism is to be a God-fearing, self-reliant, freedom-loving American. Thank you to everybody that's been praying for the show. And make sure you go to Facebook.com/Patriot Radio US. Patriot Radio US. Like the page. Share it with your friends and family. And have the conversations, truth and love, with your folks that are close to you about these issues of freedom and liberty. Well, it's my honor to introduce my guests today. We have two. Very special on Patriot Radio to be able to do that. Pastor John Repsold, he's the pastor of Mosaic Fellowship in downtown Spokane. And I really appreciate why he's coming on. But he also wanted to bring on his daughter. And I appreciate the fact that she wants to come on Patriot Radio, and it's probably going to be a little awkward. I don't know how often she has been on radio before, but Joanna Hyatt, thank you both for joining me today on Patriot Radio, and let's talk about some of these issues you have near and dear to your heart. All right, so looks like we might be having a technical problem at the studio. All right, well, I want to talk a little bit about what's happening.
Can you hear us yet?
Yeah, I can hear you now. Go. Perfect.
Okay. Hi, Matt.
All right.
Sorry, Matt.
Hey. Well, welcome on Patriot Radio, both of you. And if you could, tell the listeners a little bit about yourself so they can kind of get an idea of where you're coming from.
Well, I'm John. I grew up in Spokane here and spent the first 18 years and then worked overseas for about a decade, came back to Spokane and pastored here at Fourth Memorial Church for 14 years and then started Mosaic Fellowship about 10 years ago.
And I'm Joanna. I also grew up in Spokane in the same house as my dad, John Repsold. And then I went to Los Angeles for about 10 years and was the director of a nationally replicated teen STD and pregnancy prevention program. And so that's where I really got my passion for the issue that we're going to discuss today.
So let's jump right into that. There, and I want to set the stage a little bit for the listeners. There's a lot of times with curriculum today, whether you're talking public school curriculum or curriculum in certain, you know, even private entities, a lot of parents don't know what's actually in the curriculum. Can you tell me what's happening in Spokane right now and why parents should really be listening right now and why other people, actually all Christians in Spokane area, should be listening right now and concerned about what's happening?
Yeah, this is going to affect every single child in the public school Spokane system, grades K through 12, and it has to do with the human growth and development curriculum. We're undergoing a complete revision of that curriculum after decades, and basically the department is they're adopting the standards that the state superintendent of instruction, public instruction has put out with very little changes. And those standards, of course, open up a whole can of worms on a lot of fronts, particularly the gender fluidity issue. And then they have adopted, or they've not adopted, they've chosen to look at three possible curriculum. Of those three, they narrowed it down to one, and that is the Planned Parenthood curriculum for certain grades. They're starting with just the grades, I think, 5 through 8 or 6 through 9, but eventually it will deal with all grades.
Wow. What do you think? Well, first of all, have you guys tracked the money behind this? I always ask this question, and you may not know the answer to it, but have you tracked the money behind this? I mean, what, you know, these curriculum that are being proposed, who's behind it?
Well, there's a lot of money behind it. The district is going to spend $118,000 the first year and then $28,000 every year thereafter. So in the first 2 years, you're looking at, nearly $140,000 worth of district money going in. But of course, this goes far beyond that. It goes also to the services that then Planned Parenthood provides outside of the school setting and encourages students to pursue.
Do you see, what was your sense? You know, I know they've brought this out as a proposal. Is your sense that they're just going to be all on board with choosing one of these options, that they aren't really listening to any other options that are out there?
Well, I think to be fair, they're trying to listen. They're starting to listen. I think they've underestimated how large a constituency in the district here feels strongly that kids shouldn't be indoctrinated in Planned Parenthood's philosophy. So they've sent it back to committee. It has yet to be seen whether that's really going to produce any substantive change or whether they're going to come forward again with pretty much the same curriculum.
Now, Joanna, in your experience dealing with this specific issue, how do you think this could affect more Christian approaches to dealing with problems like STD? And let's just be frank about, you know, issues of sexual trauma and some of the other things that happen that are horrific in this world.
Well, the problem is when you set up Planned Parenthood as the trusted resource to our young people, you are saying as a community, as a district, that this is the standard of care that we want for our young people. And Planned Parenthood has a documented record of failing to report and sometimes even intentionally covering up child sexual abuse, sex trafficking. They we're seeing decreases in all of their services, particularly, cancer exams and in the clients served, and yet abortions going up. And so as a Christian parent, as a mom, we recently moved back here, and I have two young girls, one who will be starting kindergarten next fall. And so I'm particularly passionate from a personal standpoint. But as a Christian parent, what's going to begin to happen is your kids are going to be spending time being taught values that are very contradictory to what we believe, not only about sexuality and what is the best way to express that with for our mind, body, and heart, but also on issues of gender identity, how you even interact with other individuals. And so, you know, from a Christian perspective, it's detrimental, but also just when you look at physically what it's going to do to our young people, you know, we're then going to be teaching our teens that really the best way to protect yourself is just to use a condom. And my years of experience have shown that that is not the best way. Abstinence is always the best way. And yes, people make choices, but our teens deserve to be properly educated on all of their options from an organization that doesn't stand to benefit when they choose perhaps a less than healthy option.
And Matt, I think this is one of the things that she touches on there is this conflict of interest that is huge here. To have an organization that benefits financially when children are, and young people are sexually active, when they need abortion services or choose abortion services, and have them teaching our children and then proclaiming that, no, this is very balanced, that's far from balance, and it's far from clear conflict of interest, I think.
Well, let me ask Joanna really quick another follow-up question. You know, I think people need to get an understanding of the scope of the problem we're dealing with, sex trafficking and sexual abuse. How big of a problem is this really? And then I'll have a couple follow-ups getting back to the curriculum.
Well, you know, when we're talking about Planned Parenthood specifically, there are documented cases around the country, and I could, you know, I can cite a couple of examples where young women have come in who were minors and they were assaulted by, usually like impregnated by a stepfather or a mother's boyfriend, and Planned Parenthood did nothing to ask, you know, why is this child pregnant and why is this older gentleman bringing her in for an abortion? You know, even just looking right kind of in our backyard, if you will, in Bellingham in 2013, a 31-year-old gentleman raped a girl while her mother was in the shower, and then he took her to a Planned Parenthood to get an abortion. And the girl was only 11 years old at the time, and Planned Parenthood did nothing to report the abuse. And that's just one of many stories. And if you have an organization that's willing to cover up and assist assault and rape of our youngest children, our most innocent young people here, because they make a dollar and we're going to give them permission to be in our schools and to have access to our students, that's unacceptable.
Well, it's unconscionable. I mean, yeah. And I've detailed it on the show before. I mean, there have been myriad claims against Planned Parenthood for everything from fraud to covering things up like this. And at the very least, it obviously warrants an investigation, especially after those undercover videos came out. I want to shift gears back to the curriculum itself. You know, one of the things that really stood out to me is the idea that this curriculum could potentially teach that gender is a completely fluid construct of mind, having nothing obviously to do with physical anatomy or chromosomes or anything. And I actually, 8 years ago, I wrote for the Alliance Defending Freedom the definition of man and woman based on chromosomal makeup. And in 99.99% of the cases, you can determine gender, man or woman, by the presence or absence of a Y chromosome. That was ultimately what we came to as a definition. How would this change that paradigm? And, you know, seventh graders, what would they be taught as far as this potential curriculum is concerned?
Well, it reaches down all the way into the kindergarten area. The state superintendent of instruction has written here that for kindergartners, they want them to understand that there are many ways to express gender. I don't know about you, but I had a hard time figuring that out at pretty much any age. But to try to explain that to kindergartners, obviously the agenda is set that they want fluidity to be the norm of the day. And so what that means is that everybody has a different gender. There's not just a spectrum line. It's actually a universe in which everybody's at a different point in the universe. So, you know, it just you make up whatever gender you want to be in the particular moment. And it'll be complete chaos and complete confusion, I think, for our kids. And as you say, a huge step away from the science. These are the folks who keep telling us it must be medically accurate, it must be medically accurate. And yet they are completely denying all medical and scientific accuracy on this issue.
What does that even mean that there can be six genders? Can you, I mean, it's kind of craziness. Can you give the listeners an idea of what that even means? It doesn't make sense to me.
Well, they've stopped saying there could be 6 or 16 or 26 different genders. They're saying everybody is kind of in their own place on this gender universe. And so it really doesn't matter where we peg somebody. We just have to let everybody experiment in whatever way they feel possible. And I've asked the question when the Human Rights Commission came out in 2015 with their new rules, and then districts adopted this. I said, "What are you going to do when you have your daughter in a locker room, and some of the guys get together and decide they're going to be transgender for 3 weeks? Well, we'll handle that." I said, "No, you're not allowed to question them, because the law says you can't. What are you going to do?" "Oh, well, we'll handle it." I said, "Well, what if a woman in there is traumatized by what she sees?" "Oh, well, we'll counsel her." "Really? What will you counsel her? That her feeling is off?" You know, so this whole thing opens up just an unbelievable Pandora's box.
Joanna, how does that confusion affect kids? I mean, what if you can even put that into words? I mean, for many of us that are Christian, that just doesn't even comport with reality or even anything we can necessarily wrap our minds around. But if you could try to let the listeners know how that might affect kids.
Absolutely. You know, children are very impressionable. I have a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old, and they will parrot back to me any number of things I say. And so I'm very mindful of what I say. And it's very clear that when you have children, you know, they are malleable. They are listening to us as adults. They see educators as authorities, and rightfully so, because, you know, in most cases, a teacher is to be trusted. And when we come in and we begin to teach something that is so central to the core of who they are and yet is fraught with confusion, what it does is it leaves kids very confused. Instead of providing guidelines and parameters and helping young people navigate as their emotions are changing, as their hormones are raging, you know, that's one thing that teenagers are known for, is raging hormones. And part of that causes them to just constantly feel in a state of chaos and to feel a little bit out of control. And adults are there to help provide guidance and direction. And when you come in with a curriculum like this that says, you know what, anything goes, anything you feel at any time is fine, you're further adding to the confusion. You're not helping clarify for teenagers who they are, what they're about, what they're to pursue, what's good, what's not as good, what's right, what's wrong. You're simply saying to them, pick anything and let's see how it goes. And kids are going to bear the brunt of this. And instead of helping them make better decisions, we're going to see them making, I would say, worse decisions. I think we're going to see STD rates continue to skyrocket. We're going to see sexual assault, I think, probably continue to skyrocket. You know, as our culture becomes more sexualized and everyone's personal preference becomes the name of the game, how do we then tell people, like my dad pointed out, what's right, what's wrong, what's okay, and what's not okay?
So, John, how is this, do you think, going to affect the church? Because you have this idea that there is no truth anymore, even though saying that actually acknowledges that there's truth, and the existence of truth actually proves the existence of God, which is a very heavy statement. But how do you think that's going to confuse the church? Because I've seen it already myself.
Well, sadly, I think the church is in a state where we tend to back away from any sort of conflict with the culture. And the problem is we keep surrendering more and more ground. We surrendered marriage, and now we're surrendering gender. I can see a day when we'll probably surrender age of consent, and it'll just keep marching forward. So we're going to end up being the people picking up the pieces. And as somebody who lives and works in the core of our city, there are a lot of pieces to pick up in this culture that is absolutely relativistic, which is sort of a contradiction in terms itself.
It really is. It's you know, ultimately, we just need to get back, obviously, to the truth. And I want to highlight a couple things on the curriculum, and maybe you can kind of help me understand the differences, if there are any differences. And I think that's important for the listeners to know between the curriculum. So you've got the Get Real curriculum from Planned Parenthood. You've got the curriculum from another organization that is not known as a bastion of Christian conservatism, and that is the California Family Planning
Correct.
Office. And
yep.
Then you've got the King County Schools doing the last iteration of curriculum as the three options, so-called. Is there a difference?
Very little difference. The only difference is that the Planned Parenthood curriculum, because we now know from Freedom of Information Act requests that they were in collusion with the Office of Public Instruction in Washington, not only developing these new standards, but developing the curriculum. So they had the inside track to developing curriculum that, that would then meet every single one of those standards. So then they come forward and Washington Public Instruction says, hey, these are the top three we think that you should look at. Those are the three that our district boiled it down to, and they're virtually all the same. So my encouragement to the district and to us as parents is to say, one size doesn't fit all. It never has. Why do we have to get stuck with one sort of curriculum? Why can't you give us two options where we can opt into either a Planned Parenthood curriculum that some members may like of the community, or we can opt into an abstinence-strong, comprehensive approach to sex education that parents who believe in absolutes can get behind and say, yes, we can talk to our kids about this.
And Matt, can I jump in? You know, Planned Parenthood has already been doing sex education in the Pacific Northwest, and there's a proven track record, and it's not great. In 2014, the Office of Adolescent Health, under President Obama, did a study of the sex programs that were receiving government grants. And one of the programs they looked at was the one being administered by Planned Parenthood of the Greater Northwest, which covers Washington, Oregon, and Hawaii. And the findings from that study showed that the female students who went through Planned Parenthood's sexual education program reported higher rates of pregnancy than those who were in the control group.
And that is exactly counter to what they try to claim publicly.
Yes.
Every time. Mm-hmm. So for the parents that are out there listening right now, I want you to get out a pen and paper real quick if you haven't tried to get one out already. I want to give you the names of these curriculums, okay? So you have them and you can write them down. The first is the Get Real curriculum. This is developed by Planned Parenthood, Get Real. And then the Healthy Smart curriculum developed by this organization, essentially the California Office of Family Planning. Then you have the Flash curriculum, which was developed by the King County Schools. And by the way, in cooperation with Planned Parenthood, which they probably don't want anybody to know. But I want to talk more about, we talked about the kind of the gender fluidity that's in there. We briefly touched on abstinence and abortion and some of these other things. What else is in these curriculum that is, you know, our so-called, you know, new truths or relativistic truths, which doesn't even make sense, but that's what they call them?
Well, there are, I think, six or seven different core idea areas that the Superintendent of Public Instruction addresses in their standards. And really, the other ones are not so revolutionary. They're pretty down to earth. But it's these two that have to do with gender, self-identity, and then the one that has to do with sexual activity and contraceptive and all of that. Those are the two that really kind of go off the rails. And on the contraceptive side, they're not just talking about it. They're bringing into the classroom lab kits that the kids can handle, and they're asking them to break into teams so that they can develop advertisements advocating for their particular contraceptive method. This is not neutral. This is far from neutral.
Joanna, what are your thoughts on that? My goodness. And the fact that it's happening here in Washington State, in our own backyard.
Well, I think one, it's a huge conflict of interest, as was pointed out. And I think that cannot be minimized, because you have an organization backing essentially two of these three curriculum, and they stand to make the most money when their sex ed curriculum actually fails. You know, when a student doesn't use a condom consistently, when birth control fails, and when they're sexually active. And we know that condoms don't even protect, even if you use them 100% correctly all the time, they do not provide 100% protection against STDs or against pregnancy. And so that's when Planned Parenthood stands to make a dollar from the abortions, from the STD tests and pregnancy tests. So there's that issue that we have to strongly question. Why are we letting somebody like that into our classrooms? But then also, we're not teaching our kids how to protect the whole of who they are. So, you know, in speaking to students, one of my things that I would always tell them is that there is no condom for your heart. And even if we could come up with a way to protect a student's body completely, we could never find a way to protect their mind and their heart as they are engaging in such an intimate act with another individual. And if we're really just focused on protecting our kids' bodies, we're missing a huge part of who they are as a person, and we're diminishing them to one component of who they are. And as we're already seeing as a culture, as we're seeing downtown, you know, and as we're seeing in our schools, that is going to have huge ramifications when you try to separate the mind and heart from the body when it comes to sex.
One of the key points that you made is they stand to make money off of their own curriculum failure. And I don't think a lot of people understand that that's the long-term game here. And I hate to use the term game, but essentially that's the way they seem to be treating it in their minds. So I'm going to call it out as it is. How can people fight back against this? What are some things that parents listening to this right now are like, you've got to be kidding me. What can I do? What would you tell them?
There are several things you can do for the next few months. The school board allows any parent, anyone really, to make a comment in a school board meeting from 4 to 5 minutes, more or less. You just got to go to the meeting. It doesn't even have to be on the agenda. And you can stand up and say, I want some input on this. So parents can literally make their voice heard before the school board. That's a rare opportunity. And every time they meet, and it's published on their website, they meet about every 2 weeks, parents can do that. They can write letters. If you can't get down there on a Wednesday night when they're meeting, write a letter to the school board. Write a letter to the editor in the newspaper. We've got school board elections coming up. We need to get candidates that reflect the community, because most of the people on the school board reflect the liberal leanings of the community, not the conservative leanings. And I think that getting involved, serving on this committee, Human Growth and Development Committee, there are always openings for that. And we're always looking for parents who have a vested interest in that. So there are a number of ways we can go after this. It's not done yet. And your input is really, really important.
I think that's a pretty key point. This is not done yet. There was one local paper that was apparently implying that this curriculum idea had been scrapped, but that's not exactly true.
Not at all.
No, it simply was pulled from the agenda to be voted on at a later time. And what was telling was that the night that it was, you know, meant to show up on the agenda, the room was packed, and about 10 to 12 of us commented against the proposed curriculum, and about 3 people commented in favor of it. And I think it was surprising to the school board to see so many people stand up and voice. And so, to the point of what my dad said of, you know, showing up and just voicing our opinion, we oftentimes just assume people know that we're against this, but we can no longer just assume. We have to make our voices heard in whatever way we can.
This is Matt Shea on Patriot Radio, and joining me today, John Repsold of Mosaic Fellowship here in Spokane, and also his daughter, Joanna Hyatt, talking about this attempt to implement curriculum in Spokane that is just, it undermines, I think it's probably even a polite way of saying it, but it tries to eviscerate essentially Christian values. And I want to kind of focus on that for a second. What other options are out there for people that are in crisis? Because I think a lot of times we will get accused of not caring about people, and we have these rigid values and we don't care, and people are in crisis and somebody's got to help them. What are other options that are out there for people, and especially young women in crisis?
Well, Spokane is rich in those resources. Obviously, Life Services or iChoice is constantly on the forefront of that. They have a mobile clinic that they take places. They have their maternity home on Ash there near Northwest Boulevard. They provide medical services. They provide support for a young mother. It's terrific. So there's no reason in this community why someone says, well, I just have to have an abortion. No, you don't. That's a choice you're making against choosing the life of your child and carrying it to term. So those resources exist. There's an excellent organization called Project 619 that Jason Susnick heads up in the area here. And it is given to going to churches and to schools with a strong abstinence-based approach to sexuality. And for churches, obviously, it is they bring in the scriptures. So we've got some great resources here. There's no reason why our community has to get stuck with just one really poor option.
I think that's really important that there are just so many, there's so many options out there. Joanna, we broadcast throughout all of Eastern Washington, Northern Idaho, Western Montana, and Northeast Oregon. And so this isn't just a Spokane thing, is it? I mean, it's not like Planned Parenthood has just picked Spokane to try to get some of this curriculum in place. What would your message be to those other communities right now that might not even know they have an issue? What would be your message for them?
You're absolutely right. This is not just Spokane. This we're seeing this actually happen all across the country. And so I would encourage those of you not living in Spokane, living in the Pacific Northwest, know that we are really sort of on, in ground zero here when it comes to this issue, because so often we are the minority voice as those of us opposed to Planned Parenthood. And so Planned Parenthood sort of assumes they can just get in easily. And so to be watching what is happening on the school board level, what is happening in your schools. Ask what the curriculum is that's being taught. Ask what the curriculum is that's maybe being considered, especially if standards are changing in these states as we're seeing happen. Then know that pretty quickly afterwards, there's going to be new curriculum adopted. And even if you don't have children in school, whether your kids are younger or they've already graduated, it's still important for you to be involved because Planned Parenthood and the left only advances when they think nobody is watching, no one's paying attention. But the minute we begin to push back, we really are the majority, and we have the voice if we will just use it.
That's absolutely right. And for both of you, what would be your message to men on this issue? Because it seems like it's always, oh, it's kind of the mother bear thing, and it's just moms involved, or this involves young women. Men don't really have a place talking about. What would be your message for men, especially about getting involved on issues like this?
I got involved with the Human Growth Development Committee years ago just because I was a dad, and I knew my kids were facing this in their schools. And I would just say to men, step up. Your work isn't done when you clock out at 5 or 6 or 8 o'clock at night. Your work's just really, your best work is beginning. And this doesn't take loads of time. It just takes being there at the right moments to be able to speak into the decision-making process across the board in our cities or our counties. So I think men have a huge impact here, as do women. But so often we manage work, but we don't manage the most important resource God's given us, which are our families. So just step up. Don't be afraid of conflict, and come with the power of Christ and the armor of God and the heart of Christ to love people.
And I would encourage gentlemen, you know, you still have a voice and you still have influence. I know that culture is at such a point now that women are pretty good at yelling how we don't need men. We don't need them for anything. We can have children on our own. We can raise children on our own. We can do everything on our own. And yet the reality is men, there is such incredible weight to you standing up and defending and speaking truth and just being a presence, either physically or with your voice. And, you know, as men do pull back, you know, whether for fear or just feeling like, you know what, I'm getting shouted down, what ends up happening is the weakest are left to be victimized. And that's children, you know, especially on this issue, that is today's children, today's young men, today's young women. And so we desperately need there to be leaders. We desperately need men to step up in their homes to talk about this issue, you know, to talk about this in their churches, to begin to engage on this in their communities, and to know that you still have a place, and we need you to take that rightful place and lead in this area, even as there are very capable women who are coming alongside to do the same.
You know, I'm going to talk about kind of a heavy issue right now in the church. It seems like there has been a lot of apathy. Seems like there's also been a lot of confusion about even what we believe as Christians. What do you see as the problems currently in the church, and what do you think some of the remedies are for that? Because it seems like if you're going to be a Christian, you should read the Bible cover to cover, know what you believe, right? Mm. What are you seeing right now? Because I think that the issues like this are, you know, a symptom of a greater problem, and that and at the root of it is us not walking in the truth and spirit.
Yep, I would agree with you, Matt, and I think that prayer has got to undergird everything we do here. in every area, but prayer is going to lead us into the presence of God, and that's where we're going to be convicted of our own sin, and where we're going to be humbled, and we're going to hopefully find the power and the strength we need to push forward and push back against the darkness. And I see a wonderful resurgence, especially among young people, have a heart for prayer and a heart for just worship, and that's that bodes very well for the future of the church. And as you say, the other is we've got to be people of God's word. It's not our opinions that matter. It's not our positions. It's the word of God that stands forever. And that is the strength that we feed off of, and where we get our direction and know what is right from wrong, and are able to say to people, this will not end well if we go another direction. It's been proven over and over again. So I would encourage people to just pray deeply for revival, for an awakening. It's been a long time since we've seen a spiritual awakening in America, and it's God's people who just need to cry out for that.
I think too, we're afraid of people not liking us, and we're afraid of causing division or whatnot. You know, people are running for their lives in the Middle East as followers of Jesus Christ. And here in America, we're afraid of someone posting a mean comment on our Facebook post. And to realize that, you know, greater is he that is in us than he that is in the world. And there will be hostility, there will be pushback. But when you begin to walk and speak the truth with love and grace, it is amazing the courage that comes, and the other people that you actually encourage, and the others you find who are trying to walk the same road, but maybe feeling very alone. And, you know, we can feel that we may not have all the answers, or we may not be as articulate as we would like to be, or as informed, but that is okay. That's okay to acknowledge that. And yet that does not give us a reason to shirk from speaking the truth and from standing up for the smallest among us, the weakest among us. And so as we press into scripture, we find our strength and our courage, and then to live boldly, and to know that these are exciting times, actually. I think it's thrilling to be at a time in history when, yes, there are places where evil is increasing, but that gives the opportunity for good to shine more brightly.
Very, very well said. And as I started the show off, you know, I really love that passage from Zephaniah. You know, the Lord stands in our midst, a victorious warrior. And, you know, are we actually standing up? Are we involved? Are we on the front lines? And are we speaking truth and love? That was terrifically said. Before we end the show, people want to get more information. They maybe want to contact you and learn more how they can get involved. Where can they go and who can they talk to?
We'll be launching a Facebook page here shortly so that we can have some social media presence. And unfortunately, I don't have the name for that yet. But currently, they could certainly email me directly at my email, jrepsold, R-E-P-S-O-L-D, at mosaicspokane.com. That's all one word. And as I say, it'll probably be a Facebook page, something about Spokane Public Schools sex ed curriculum.
Perfect. And if you can, when you post that up, tag me on Facebook, and I can make sure to share that far and wide. I really appreciate both of you for what you're doing, and love to have you back on again as this thing continues to develop. Really appreciate your hearts for Jesus, and the fact that you're willing to stand up and really, I think, expand the kingdom of Jesus Christ, particularly in this area of schools.
Thank you, Matt.
Thanks,
for the
Matt.
Time.
So appreciate
right.
it.
John Repsold, Mosaic Fellowship in Spokane, his daughter, Joanna Hyatt. Thank you very much for joining me on Patriot Radio today. And if you want to get more information, again, I'm going to get that posted up on Facebook as we get those conduits for involvement set up. But again, understand that this isn't just a Spokane issue, that whether you're in Yakima right now, whether you're in Moses Lake, whether you are in Ephrata or Walla Walla, or North Idaho, or Western Montana, this can affect you. And if it's starting in Washington, it's going to be spread throughout the rest of not only the state, but the region. That's how these things start. So really dive into this and make sure that you know what curriculum is being used in your particular area. I think that's so important. And whether or not, you know, this get real curriculum is being used, or the flash curriculum is being used, know that it's essentially the same thing, at least as far as a biblical worldview is concerned. It is not preaching the actual truth and reality of God. And I think that all of us right now, we have really busy lives. We're running to and fro. Everything is going on. And we need to take and stop and evaluate what is around us right now. Because if we don't intervene now, will our posterity really have a chance? Or are we going to spend most of the rest of our lives trying to recover our posterity because they've been led astray for all those hours during the week and we're trying to correct it when we get back home? That's why this stuff is important. And I, you know, as I've said before on this show, you know, we need to preach the gospel of the kingdom of Jesus Christ. And this needs to be in every single area of our lives, all creation. Make disciples of all nations. Passa in Greek, all means all, okay? We need to do that and not have these little areas of, well, in school, maybe I'm not going to have my Christianity be so shining. You know, I'm going to hide it under a bushel basket. I'm not going to let my light shine out. That's not the right answer. It needs to be in every single area of our lives. And if we do that as Christians, we're going to see a profound change in the culture because we have drawn near to the Lord and we're walking in the Spirit and in truth. And ultimately, when we get to heaven, that's what the Lord's talking about when he says, well done, thou good and faithful servant. And we didn't just pick one area of our lives to preach the gospel, to make disciples, to love our neighbor as ourselves, and to love the Lord our God with all our mind, heart, body, soul, and spirit. We picked every area of our life to do that. And this is just one more example of where you can get involved at the local level to push back on the degradation of our Christian worldview. Well, this is Matt Shea. Thank you once again for joining me on Patriot Radio today. And want to make sure, defend freedom locally. Remember that. Share it with your friends and family. And may God bless all of you. And may he make this generation the greatest one.